The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy Saturday only. Women's and girls tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Wednesday, November 14th, 2018. Thanks for giving me a listen. And I appreciate all of you who have provided feedback and given me a rate and review on the Apple Podcasts app. It really is awesome. And those of you who are checking me out on Patreon and want exclusive content and a lot more ad-free stuff, do appreciate that as well. And it's a great place to go if you like this show and you want exclusive stuff and you hate ads. We all hate those ads, right? I pay extra on Hulu because I don't want to see the ads. It's just convenience. It's a pain in the ass, right? So thank you guys for joining me. Today is a bit different. Typically, I would give you my thoughts on Raw and SmackDown and go into my typical analysis. But I have a guest today, and his name is James Ludeman, and he is from Florida and a fellow wrestling fanatic, fan for life. We are chatting about WWE. We're chatting about what brought us to wrestling. We chatted about today's product. We chatted about, obviously, Ronda and Becky, which took up a lot of the show, but had some great comments from him and a great conversation. And so I really encourage you to stay tuned for that. There's a lot of good content there. And on the Patreon exclusive version of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the things we didn't touch on Raw and SmackDown from this week and give my official Survivor Series predictions for this Sunday, which the card looks quite different with Becky out of it and AJ Styles no longer facing Brock Lesnar. So two massive changes to the show, last minute changes, and I'm going to give you my thoughts on that on the exclusive Patreon show. So if you're like, what the hell's Patreon? It's in my link in my bio of Twitter, which, by the way, you can follow me at the WWE Podcast if you want to do so. I highly encourage that you do. So guys, I'm not going to keep you waiting any longer. Just take a listen. I think you'll enjoy, and definitely going to have him back on the show in the near future. So enjoy, and as always, thank you for being a listener of the WWE Podcast. All right, guys, welcome back to the WWE Podcast. And right now, I have a special guest. And this individual I met through Twitter, and before we even started this recording, we immediately just got into wrestling, got into some favorite memories. He is from Florida, and I am in New York, Albany, New York, where it is freezing cold, and I am super jealous of where this individual is. And he has been a fan for 30-plus years, and his name is James Ludeman. So, James, welcome to the show. How are you doing? You there, James?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry. Like I said, the beauty of technology. No, it's good to be here, man. Thanks for having me on. And it was, like you said, man, it was good good conversation there in the beginning, and definitely good to be here. I love the podcast, so this is a cool opportunity, man. I love it.
Hey, no, it's awesome to have you on here. It's and you know I've been looking to try to find some new voices on the show, and you know it sounds like you'll be a great addition for this episode, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. Which I mean, I'm gonna kind of let things be as they may. I want to kind of touch on how you got started as a fan and maybe get into a little bit of what's going on today, because after this past week of SmackDown and Raw and this whole month and Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey, we're going to get to all of that. But before we do, I want to just ask you, so how did you become a fan? What are your earliest memories of watching wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, for me, I've really been watching, like you said, for a very long time. You know, I'm 30 years old, so I'm right around, grew up in the greatest time of wrestling, in my opinion. The Monday Night Wars was really important to me. And, you know, we kind of touched base on this a little bit, and that's why I think it's just going to work out so well, because we just started talking about wrestling, and that was just how it worked out. But really, my fondest memory, and the one that I remember the most, is I remember there was a Monday Nitro, and yeah, I was a WCW guy, you know, before the WWE Attitude Era kind of got going. But I just remember watching Sting, and I watched that whole feud for a year with his progression and his development, and, you know, kind of watching him grow and get into, you know, his Crow character. And, man, every Monday night was just great television. It was a great opportunity. But I remember when he came and debuted at Uncensored, I actually was watching it with a friend. And he came down from the rafters and just beat the crap out of everybody in the NWO. And, man, I remember just how exciting it was to be a wrestling fan back then. Because, you know, now it's not – I wouldn't say it's as acceptable now as it used to be. Like, you tell people now you're a wrestling fan, they're like, okay. But, you know, back then everybody was a wrestling fan. You knew who Stone Cold was. You knew who The Rock was. You knew Sting and Hogan and all those – and Goldberg and all those guys. And – you know, those are really just some of my favorite memories growing up, you know, being a wrestling fan in the time where being a wrestling fan was awesome and it was cool. And I kind of miss those days, but I know those days are few and far between now. But I feel like, I know we're going to talk about this, but I feel like Becky Lynch is making it okay to be a wrestling fan again.
That's an awesome way to think about that. I know that we might be jumping around here, but that's just kind of the way it goes when you talk wrestling, because so many things connect to one another, and it could be 20 years apart, and you can draw parallels and things, and especially as long as you've been a wrestling fan and as long as I've been a wrestling fan, there's so many different things that you can point to and go, that's why I love being a fan. This is what keeps bringing me back. And as you just alluded to, Becky Lynch is starting to pull at my old mentality of how I used to look at wrestling. She's pulling me back in time, and that's a good thing. For an industry right now that is just so transparently open on their own shows about how scripted they are, Becky's bringing that engagement and emotional investment back in, and that's what I love. But back to your early memories is watching WCW and Uncensored and Sting's debut, and that seems to be the character that really grabbed you when you first began. Now we mentioned this off the air that you remember specifically that night when Tony Schiavone was on WCW and on commentary, and he tried to foil the Mick Foley WWE title win for the first time, and ended up infamously backfiring on WCW. That turned the tide of the war. What specifically do you remember about that night?
I just remember, like, I was watching Nitro, and it wasn't. If you go back on the WWE Network and you watch that Monday Nitro, which it's so cool that that's available. That's another difference between, you know, then and now. We have so much content available to go back and watch, which is great. So if I ever need to, you know, go back to the Monday Night War, I can always relive it any time on the network, and it's fantastic. Brilliant idea by WWE on that. But anyway, I'm not being paid by them, so whatever. But anyway, so for me, you know, it wasn't a particularly exciting night of Nitro. It was just another episode at that point. I think even when the announcement was made, Sting hadn't even come on yet. So the real ending to Nitro, their world title. That ought to put some butts in the seats. And little did Eric Bischoff, who made the call to say that to Tony Schiavone, little did they know that that did put butts in the seats, and it also made cable viewers turn channels. And I don't think they were really expecting that. So I thought that that for me was a huge and crucial point to, you know, just to the Monday Night War in general. If you notice, I think you mentioned it earlier, that's when things really started to, you know, kind of turn in WWE's favor at that point, and they never really looked back after that. But yeah, I'll never forget that. And then watching that moment when Mick Foley won the world title and the WWE championship at that point, you know, with DX out there and Stone Cold coming to just stick it right to Vince. And that was the beginning of just some amazing things that they did going forward for the next, you know, however long it was, 5 years after that, so or 3 or 4 years after that. So that's specifically kind of what I remember about it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't ever say that I was a WCW guy. I would flip occasionally back and forth, and there's, you know, not taking anything away from WCW. I mean, at their peak, they crushed WWE for 80 some weeks. I can't remember the exact number. And, you know, until that time when Mick Foley won the WWE Championship, WCW was dominating. And, you know, my first memories go back to 1997 at Bad Blood with Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. That's when that's the very first one, the very first feud that really grabbed me. And being, let's see, 1997, I'm 33, so I was 12 years old. Barely 13, almost in my teen years. So yeah,
I was 9 years old. Yeah, I was 9 years old when that happened. I do remember watching that match, the Hell in a Cell, and it was. I still think it's one of the top, probably three or four that have been out there. I'd put it in the top five, bar none, and one of my favorites as well. But yeah, sorry.
It's fine. I just remember being so engaged, and I knew at the time I was old enough to realize that, you know, that this wasn't, you know, they're not really trying to hurt each other, but you weren't thinking about that consciously. It was a story that was so well told, the build up to it, and just the whole story that was created from this Undertaker Shawn Michaels feud of Shawn trying to run away from the Undertaker, and they had that In Your House Ground Zero where you know, Shawn escaped the Undertaker and he had the help of Triple H in China. And to put the cell around those two for the very first time made logical sense. HBK and Taker have always had amazing chemistry, although I don't know about Crown Jewel. I don't know if we should mention Crown Jewel on this show. But, I mean, so obviously they had their subsequent matches at WrestleMania 25 and 26, which were some of the all-time greats, 25 more than 26. But again, that feud made it so real. And then the blood that Shawn Michaels had that night, everything about it, the commentary, just the whole presentation, that's what really grabbed me as a fan first.
Well, the debut of Kane that yes. night too. I mean, that was the biggest part, was to get this whole storyline of your brothers coming. They built that up, and it had nothing to do with Shawn Michaels whatsoever. And I thought that was one of the more better build-ups for him to come in. And the dude, I mean, Kane is just jacked anyway, and he's definitely in the best shape that he's been in, obviously, in that time. But, man, that guy used to scare me, dude. I remember watching Kane, and I'd be afraid to go to bed, like, some nights, because he just – like, when he poured blood on Austin in the middle of the ring, I legit thought I was going to die. Like, I don't know why, but it was really scary. It was not – But that was all to say that was just a great night. I'm with you on that, man. The debut of Kane was perfectly well done. One of Vince McMahon's last times on commentary too. So
yes, it was.
A lot of interesting things about that evening.
It was, and right before Austin was just about to get into his, obviously, one of the biggest programs of all time, Austin and McMahon. So you're right, yeah, that was the last time, one of the last times Vince was on commentary. Kane's debut, when Kane, as you said, was a legit badass. That guy, you know, everyone thinks, oh, there's been more than one Kane. No, there hasn't. There's always been one Kane. It's been Glenn Jacobs, who's played Kane the entire time, other than that weird program where they had two Kanes and all that nonsense. But it has always been Glenn Jacobs. championships. And when he tore the door off the cell and he had Paul Bearer, who was one of the best managers of all time, it was just – it's magic. It's one of those moments that you can put on paper and it still will not do it justice until you actually execute it and it happens. So now, as you grew and WCW started to fade, when did you make the switch to WWF at the time, or did you? How did that whole evolution come about? Obviously, WWE acquired WCW in early 2000s, but how did you make that transition from WCW to WWF, WWE?
You know, now that I look back on it, and it's kind of funny, that's really a good question, because to be honest, I don't know if I could give you a specific way that it happened. I remember I did channel flip after that night, so I was kind of going back because Sting was still at that point. You know, it's 97 still, and obviously, like I mentioned before, it was really the height of Sting's popularity in WCW. Really kind of came into his own, all building up to Starrcade, which was probably the most let-down world title match that I've ever seen in my life. Everybody botched it. Including Hogan and Sting, and the referee for that matter. So I think it was probably after Starrcade, 97. I remember watching Starrcade. We had a friend who was like rich, so he'd always get the pay-per-views and we'd just go to his house and watch it. Long before the network, obviously. But I just remember after Starrcade, you know, I was kind of like, well, you know, Sting and Hogan, they fought. And the ending was botched, and at that point, you know, I was a kid, and I was like, well, I'm just going to go over to WWF. And then at that point, you know, I tried to catch up on everything that was going on. I'd say really the height of my love for WWF really started in the early 98, right around WrestleMania in that year, which I believe was, what was that? Was that Shawn? That was Shawn and Stone Cold at that point, yeah. So and obviously with Mike Tyson coming in, that was must-see television. When Mike Tyson's there and he's a DX guy and he's against Austin and they were going to fight. And, I mean, it was just a crazy good time, like I said, to be a wrestling fan. But I think that's when really my own personal journey with the WWF transitioning to WWE really, really got started. And obviously I never turned back. I've been a WWE fan since then. Even through the years when the product was stale, because there have been times where the product for WWE has been pretty stale at times, but I still fought through and I'm still here to this day and still really excited to be a fan, especially now. I feel like, you know, I mentioned it earlier, I think Becky Lynch is really the beginning of what could be a turn for the WWE. I don't know if they're going to fully turn it to Attitude Era, but she's gotten to say things that have really been, it seems as though they've kind of given her the reins to take this character to the next level. And I think it's exciting to watch, and I think the WWE should be commended for how they've really had her kind of come into her own over the last several months. The turn at SummerSlam was great, and then obviously this whole build-up with Ronda, even though they're not fighting Sunday, which I know we're going to get into, I still think you can build this Ronda and Becky thing up for the next several months to a WrestleMania main event. Those two can main event WrestleMania with their popularities right now. I really believe that that could be the WrestleMania main event coming up in 2019.
And, you know, we just can't help ourselves with Becky and Ronda. I mean, it's just –
I just love her. I love her. I don't know what it is. I love her.
It is something that you can't manufacture. It's that quote, it factor. It's that intangible that not everyone ever – you can't teach it. It doesn't happen for some performers. It never happens throughout most performers' careers, that real organic connection with the audience that you can't script. You can't do anything other than just let it organically happen, and Becky has that. She and what WWE should be concerned about if they're trying to position Ronda as a babyface during this whole program. Obviously, they're not fighting now in Survivor Series, but they need to be careful because Ronda is this somewhat outsider. She's somewhat of an outsider coming into WWE. Yes, she has a crazy, very well-documented background in MMA, which was one of the most dominant performances, male or female, in the sport ever. But Becky has essentially grown up with the fans. She has essentially just step by step, the fans have seen her ups, they've seen her downs, they've seen the on again, off again, start stop with her push, and now that she has that WWE turned her at SummerSlam, I don't think WWE was going for this. I think they accidentally stepped in it. But as you said, to their credit, they have done nothing but throw gas on the fire to Becky really getting more. I think Becky is the hottest woman or really any performer currently in WWE. But as far as the women go in WWE, Raw or SmackDown, she is the hottest act to come along in the last 10 years. I really believe that. And I don't say that lightly. I think Becky has really, really come a long way. And I just really would be careful if I was WWE right now. They need to really tread lightly. But as you just said, and then I'll toss it to you on if you have further comments on this, is this could be a blessing in disguise. We're all disappointed about not seeing Ronda versus Becky at Survivor Series. But the more you think about it, the more that you really think in how WWE could play this out, is Ronda versus Becky is more of a WrestleMania main event than we all thought it was going to be Charlotte versus Ronda. And now we're getting Charlotte versus Ronda, and it doesn't feel like it you know, we all thought it would when it got here. It's like, okay, this is cool. I thought this was going to be at WrestleMania, but I guess Becky and Ronda are now going to be at WrestleMania, which to me makes the most sense.
Yeah, and I would agree with you on that. I know there's been also some talk about possibly doing the Four Horsewomen gig. I don't know if it's too. I think it's a little bit too soon for that. I think you can definitely do that main event and any other pay per view next year, and I still think you would get a great reception to that. But going back to what you said about the Becky and Ronda this week, you know why I think it kind of feels a little lackluster. This is just my opinion on this. Because we have all put our heart into this buildup. I mean, you look at this buildup, and this has been a very short buildup. I mean, you got to think, Charlotte and Becky just came off of this really high-octane feud where we weren't sure how it was going to turn out. But they really, both of them, to their credit, at Evolution, just tore it down. I mean, it literally could be match of the year. I think, really, there hasn't been another match that has been at that caliber this year. I think it's one of the top ones. Now, the other thing about this too, like I said, once Becky was kind of tooling toward Ronda after Evolution, you start to really see these two say, okay, well, this is kind of interesting now, because now Becky is they were trying to push her as a heel and it didn't work. And she knew it didn't work. WWE knew it didn't work. So they just said, just go do what you got to do. And really gave her the reins. And I think that's the great part about this, is that it reminds me of that Attitude Era. Vince Russo had Vince McMahon to run his ideas through, but Vince Russo also encouraged superstars to carry their own weight, to get into their own persona, to give their own advice, to say what they want to say to a certain degree. I think DX was the only one that really got away with just saying whatever they wanted to say, but everybody wanted it that way. Becky is kind of one of those people. She can say what she wants. I don't know if you saw earlier today, but Nia Jax went on and said, how come nobody's asked me about my hand? And Becky just ripped into her. I mean, just ripped into her. I don't know if you saw that.
No,
but,
I didn't.
That was impressive. But to me, I think Charlotte and Ronda can still be a great match. I think there's a lot of interesting factors to Charlotte and Ronda. I think there are some great things about the both of them that could really maybe not steal the show as Becky and Ronda would have, but I still think you're going to get a great high-quality match out of those two. So I think there was only two girls that could have filled Becky's spot. One of those was Charlotte, and the other one was Asuka. And I think those two were the only two on SmackDown Live that could have replaced her. And I think WWE knew that too going forward, and I figured Charlotte was going to be the one. I secretly was kind of hoping it was Asuka, because I think that would be an interesting main event.
Yeah.
For that, but I'm not disappointed with the pick. I'm disappointed with Becky not being there, and I'm disappointed with the fact that she was injured last night or on Monday night, when it was just a careless injury, in my opinion, that should have never happened. But hey, it's not ballet, as they say. I mean, that's just how it is,
It's not, and it's just such bad timing. Just like Alexa Bliss getting injured before Evolution, it's ill timed. But at the same time, that look, the blood running down her face, the visual of that, the gifts of that, the video, the pictures, everything about that to me, while she was injured, and it sucks that she's not facing Ronda, at least at this time, and she will, it's just a matter of time, what she got out of that might actually be more than what we, I think, would have gotten had everything gone smoothly, and yes, we get the Ronda and Becky match, but the blood like that, the hard way, doesn't always come. And to me, the wrestling gods were smiling down on Becky that night. And really, to me, that visual just solidified that badass, that edge, that just that whole persona that she has inside of her that she's been really suppressing over the last 5 years when WWE is trying to make her this happy-go-lucky, just this last kicker that is really one-dimensional. She is like four-dimensional now, where she is just emoting confidence. She's oozing confidence, and I love it, and people love that. That's why I don't think WWE really knows how to turn someone heel successfully in 2018. I really don't think so. I mean, look at the heel turns that they've done over the last year. Okay, maybe Randy Orton might be the most successful. You have Braun Strowman. That was a quasi-strange heel turn, although he was justified in aligning himself with Dolph and Drew because the Shield had attacked him the week before. I don't see that WWE really understands the psychology of how to turn someone heel and make the people hate them. It's hard. And when you have a badass like Becky who has gone on this journey and the fans have wanted to see her in this position for so damn long and they love that edge that she now has, I just there's no turning back. To me, it's all gas from here on out. And like you just said, I would have loved to have seen Asuka too if I was in that position. I thought they would have picked
Asuka. It's what they tried to do with Becky.
Right.
You know, they tried to turn her heel, and the crowd knew they weren't going to have that, so they're going to cheer her. They're going to cheer guys who are supposed to be heels like Kevin Owens, Braun Strowman, you know, these guys. The only heel I think is really, if there's one heel right now, it's Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
That's the only heel that I think is really out there, and that's a recent thing. You know, that's not I think when Roman Reigns went down and that was, I'm gonna tell you, that was one of the most emotional segments of Raw I've ever watched. I got to watch Jim Duggan's speech on WCW when he came out and said he had cancer and he was fighting that and he would take some time away. But man, Roman Reigns, as much as you want to boo the guy, mm-hmm. Just you got to appreciate what he did and the way he did it. And kudos really to him, and hopefully he has a speedy recovery in this, because I know this is just such a crazy time for him, obviously. But but here's the thing: to me, you try to turn these guys heel. If the crowd doesn't want it, they're not going to do it. And if WWE tries to shove it down your throat, it doesn't matter. It's whatever the crowd wants you to do. So it's just like when they tried to do this with Becky. Becky said in an interview, she's like, "Listen, the WWE tried to get me to be heel." And the crowd said, "We're not buying it. We're going to cheer you because you've been messed up. You've been screwed over many times out of title matches, Money in the Bank matches. 2 years in a row, she was on the ladder about to win Money in the Bank, and something happened. James Ellsworth, yep. or whoever. So, I mean, it's just a situation where, to take a line from the late, great Owen Hart, I'm tired of this, and I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, it's just not going to happen. So I'm proud of WWE for the way that they've handled this Becky situation. You're right, they kind of stepped into it. But I think Becky has taken this to just a level that, you're right, they never thought was possible. And so kudos to her. And I guess now the next guy they're going to try to do this heel turn for is Daniel Bryan. And I think that they might have executed that very well on SmackDown.
And that's the next thing I wanted to talk about. But before we get into that, I just want to wrap up this Becky situation and touch a little bit on Roman, because as much as I and if anybody's listening to my show, like I am super I love Roman Reigns, just not in the position in the way he was casted as a babyface. To me, it made no sense. And the fact that Vince McMahon has fought it for 4 years made absolutely zero sense to me. It frustrated me for years and years and years. But obviously, having him come out and say he has leukemia it brings you back to humanity and brings you back to just this is a person with a real family, and it immediately makes you relate with the guy. So to me, the guy got over in about 10 minutes that WWE was trying to accomplish in 4 years. And it was sad that it had to be leukemia for the reason that, you know, got him over with the fans that were booing him for years. But the fact that He did that, and I think to me, when he comes back, and let's all hope it's when he comes back, this guy is going to get a massive pop. And you know, if it's years from now, even a year or two from now, it's going to be a mega story, and this guy's going to get the roof is going to get blown off the place of wherever he returns. I mean, let's be honest, because it's a great feel good story. I mean, and it's a real story. It's not manufactured. So that's my thought on Roman Reigns. But you know, getting back to Becky Lynch, you know, this to me is something that doesn't come along often. What Becky Lynch is going through right now is once, I would say a couple times every 3-4 years that this kind of thing happens. I think the last real feeling that I had for a wrestler that was felt just not scripted, and as you said, she feels like she's just saying whatever she wants, and I think to some extent she is. I think the last parallel you could draw is CM Punk when he was with the WWE, and fans organically was just drawn to him after he had that, obviously, the infamous pipe bomb in Vegas and all of that. Becky seemed to have turned on a dime in a similar way, obviously not with a promo, but it feels like that. It feels like that, and she's got something that not many people get in their careers, and I'm looking forward to it. You just want to watch SmackDown, and you want to watch Raw because you want to see what she's going to do. And no disrespect for the women, but let's be honest, up until this women's revolution, women's wrestling was a joke. So yeah. The fact that I'm watching wrestling and watching Raw and watching SmackDown to see Becky Lynch and what she's going to do next and who she's going to beat up or what she's going to say, that's really astonishing when you think about it from where women's wrestling was.
Yeah, I agree, man. I'm totally all in with you on that. I think especially she makes SmackDown fun. I mean, you know, it's Raw is kind of I don't know how to describe Raw. I don't know if it's just too long. I don't know, because I know there's a lot of talent on Raw, and there are the women's division on Raw is I think stronger than the women's division on SmackDown. You know, because outside of Charlotte and Becky, there really isn't a whole lot of substance. Well, maybe Asuka also. There isn't really a whole lot of substance outside of that. But, I mean, if you're looking at the Raw brand, you know, Nia Jax, Tamina, Ember Moon, who's really really needs to kind of, I think, get a better push. I was very disappointed with how they handled her against Nia, but they're doing this whole, I don't know if they're setting up for tag team championships for the women. I feel like that's going to happen down the line, and maybe this is why Nia and Tamina are partnering up now. But, you know, there's Sasha Banks, Bayley, Mickey James, Alexa. I mean, really, the Raw roster is just stacked with women. And so for Becky to really be the man, literally. Just pretend. I have to pretend I'm the man, too, you know. But anyway. But no, it's just really good. It's a really good time for the women's revolution right now. Evolution, I thought, was the best thing that could have possibly happened to the women's division. And I think it's going to be something you see more often than once a year. I think you probably see it 2, maybe even 3 times a year. Cause I think they earned it. And I think they really brought it when it was on the line, they brought it. And Becky and Charlotte are closely responsible for 90% of that.
It was, and I said this on my show, you know, about a month ago when this happened. It was one of the best pay-per-views I've seen in not just 2018, but in recent memory. I wouldn't say ever. I wouldn't say ever. I mean, that's a pretty big set of shoes to fill. But it was easily the best pay-per-view of 2018, maybe the best pay-per-view of 2017, or at least the majority of them. It was a wrestling show. And amazingly, we watched WWE to watch wrestling. And so it was one of the best, as from an in-ring perspective, bell to bell. You don't always have to have a crazy promo. It's about telling stories inside of the ring, and it's amazing when they just go back to the basics, how good of a show that you can have and give the women time to shine. And yes, you obviously had the NXT women too come out, and they had their spot in the sun, and it was awesome. I was left wanting more, and that is not something that I feel from every WWE pay-per-view that seems to go on, you know, for 3 days. It felt like it was just the right amount of time. Would I have given more time to some matches than others? Yeah, but from really what I thought it was going to be to what it was, absolutely blew my expectations away. And this is going to be something, as you just said, is going to be not a one-off. This is something that's going to continue, and it's going to be, I think, something that WWE builds off of. And as I said, also, the Evolution pay-per-view, the first one, that is going to be something that WWE builds on. You're going to see video packages. You're going to see likely a documentary down the line on how that was built, really everything that went into it to get to that point. It was a turning point in the women's evolution, revolution, whatever you want to call it. It was that good. And I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I am as well. And, you know, kind of going off what you said about really caring about a character, I think there's only a couple of characters, you know, outside of Becky, which we've talked all the show about. But there's only a couple of other characters that I really am invested in. Seth Rollins is one of those guys. And him and Dean Ambrose have a great feud going on right now. I think that's only going to get better. But I'll tell you, there's one guy that I really feel like, and it's really the whole group, and I'm sure this is just... Hold on, did it cut it? There we go. I really believe in my heart that Adam Cole could be the future of this business. And I'm telling you, Undisputed Era, I love every second of it. I've seen them, and I have the benefit of living in Florida, so I'm able to go to live shows here for NXT. Dude, I'm telling you, there's nobody better. On the mic right now in NXT, just a guy who is compelling, a guy who you never know what he's going to do next. Adam Cole in the Undisputed Era, I think, could literally be something that changes the whole landscape of WWE when they get called up. And they may not get called up. According to, you know, Triple H tweeted out in an interview, he actually said, you know, NXT is kind of becoming a third brand. You know, there may be guys who just stay there just because it's really kind of come into its own and developed in such a crazy way I don't think Triple H ever foresaw it getting as big as it has. You know, that's another thing. War Games is this weekend. Undisputed Era is in a big match. I just enjoy every second. I enjoy every second of Undisputed Era. I love Adam Cole, man.
There's no question about it. And I listened to that media call that Triple H did with some of the larger journalists in the wrestling industry. And he just mentioned exactly what you just said. And he tweeted it out, too, that NXT isn't just and may not be, although it still will be, I think, simultaneously, not just a breeding ground or a funnel just to grow these individuals. And then when they're ready, just pull them out and then stick them on the main roster, because as we've seen, that doesn't always work out the best. And if they want to build NXT to a higher level, you want to keep these stars so that when you see NXT, you don't just go, oh, well, yeah, they're starting to really gain traction, and I'm really liking what they're doing, just as you said with Adam Cole in the Undisputed Era, that you associate that. You associate stars with NXT, not just a breeding ground when, you know, they develop long enough and big enough and Triple H says, yeah, they're going to go, and Vince says they're going to go, stick them on SmackDown Live or Raw. I mean, think about what they did with who was it? Who was that first call-up? Apollo Crews, he burst on the scene. He's in great shape. I think they really brought him up too soon. I mean, I really believe that's the case. You could even make a case for Nia Jax coming up too soon, who has injured...
No, I'm with you on that. Way too soon, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yes, she's got a good presence, and she looks different, and she isn't like most girls, as her theme song says, and I get all that, and that's a nice persona to have, but, man, she's putting the safety of the performers at risk multiple times. I mean, this isn't something that's happened once or twice. This is something that's happened several times over the last few months, and now injuring one of the hottest stars in WWE. It's a liability right now with Nia Jax, and do they throw her down to developmental and put her there for a few months? I don't know what the answer is. But, you know, the point is that I'm trying to make, NXT, as you just said, I think it would benefit them to look at that as a third brand. And if you want to bring people up to SmackDown and Raw, I think that's you can do it. But I think you need to do things simultaneously. You can bring people up, but you can also build the brand and keep guys there to really elevate the NXT vision as a whole.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I agree. And I think, you know, I think I would even go as far as to say that some of the talent – would prefer it that way. I think some of the talent would really like to stay in NXT and really kind of build that up. And, you know, I think, honestly, Adam Cole might be one of those guys that I think you call up eventually because I think he's really got it. I think he's got that it factor that we talked about. I think he could really be a big deal in the company with WWE. And I think, you know, there's a couple other guys that could do it too. You know, obviously, Tommaso Ciampa is going to be one of those guys. He's going to be the heel. I think he might be... He might go down as the biggest heel in the company's history. I mean, you just want to hate the guy. Like, you look at him and you want to hate him. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's just a guy. And I know they're trying to build Johnny Gargano into that. But Tommaso Ciampa, he's another guy who just did it naturally. It was just a natural thing. He betrayed his best friend. He didn't have to say a word. And everyone just hated him. And still does hate him, for that matter. I think he's probably getting more cheers now than boos, probably. Just because everybody's realizing how great of a talent he is, but then the only other guy in NXT I would call up at this point, and he's had some high praise from some big superstar, is Velveteen Dream, and I think he deserves it. To see him come off of Tough Enough and build, you know, I've seen his persona change two or three times because he wrestles here locally with NXT. They travel to different cities here in Florida, so like I said, I have that really awesome benefit of that. But man, to see him get into this Velveteen Dream character and have these quality matches with these guys, he's going to have a great match against Ciampa this Saturday. I think it's going to be one of the matches of the night, if not the match of the night. It could very well be that. Oh. Those two guys could steal the show easily.
No question. I'm really looking forward to it. That's what I love about NXT too. I mean, number one, these guys are all really young, and some guys are not always made for the main roster. If that's what you want to call Raw and SmackDown, and that's fine. That's not such a bad thing. And as I said, they're young too, so they've got a lot of time to grow. And that very well could be the match of the night. If I was going to be a betting man, I'm not. But if I was, that would be my pick as far as on paper what looks like to be the match of the night. And you know, I've only been to one NXT show, at least locally. They don't come to Albany too often. You know, they're about 10 minutes from my house, but that's a wrestling show. And as I said about Evolution, that was widely praised. Why? Because they did an awesome job inside the ring. NXT, it's got a similar format of, yeah, there's storytelling. They do have promos. Of course, you need that. I'm not saying to just, you know, be mimes and come out there and just wrestle a match and don't speak a word. But I think WWE relies a lot too often on the backstage skits, on bad comedy, on just 20-minute long-winded promos that you know are going to open Raw in some form or fashion. And it's that same formula. And it sometimes becomes a little predictable, and you kind of get a feeling of how everything's going to get set up and all that. NXT feels like it's almost what's old is new again, and that's what I love about NXT. It's back to the roots of what made wrestling wrestling, and that's why I think it's become so successful, especially from the hardcore fans' perspective who are clamoring for the days of old. You're kind of getting that. I mean, there's no blood, guts, gore, sex, and you know, all of that that accompanied TV-14, and I don't think WWE is going to go back to that point. I mean, my God, they would lose the 4,000 charities that they love to promote every month, and you know, all of their Make-A-Wish and all of that. That would go right down the drain. You'd have sponsors freaking out in such a PC-sensitive world. It's not going to happen. But they're bringing back what they can and leaving out the stuff that I think would push them over that rating. I mean, you're just taking the good parts and leaving out the stuff that would I think be a negative in the view of minds of many shareholders. So now I just kind of want to wrap this up, and we touched on this quickly with Daniel Bryan, and that is his heel turn, which, as you said, was successfully done. And I think when, you know, it was probably the best outcome that they could have had as far as if that's their goal. Do I agree with the Daniel Bryan heel turn? I don't know yet. You know, if you had asked me before it happened, I would have said, no, that's stupid. Daniel Bryan's over. But he's not over to the level that he was when he won at WrestleMania 30. He has kind of felt like he's treaded water. He doesn't have that same vibe to him. He's kind of been in that upper mid-tier for the last few months since his return. So I'm okay with it. And so far, I would say, so far, so good with his heel turn. I like the body language that Daniel Bryan has presented. He's got a different look in his eye when he turned on AJ and then he beat him after the match and beat him down. That felt different. And I'm open to seeing Daniel Bryan as a heel because I've never seen it before, at least prior to his prior to getting kicked in the face by Sheamus and having that infamous 7-second match at WrestleMania 29, I believe.
Oh, jeez, yeah. What a terrible match. Yeah. Stupid AJ Lee. Anyway, no, but no, I'm with you. You know, I was a little skeptical at first when he kicked him, you know, in the gonads, which poor AJ Styles, never going to have another kid again, apparently. poor guy. But, you know, when it first happened, I was not going to lie. I was kind of in shock. I wasn't expecting him to do it this soon. They already put the seed in a few weeks ago when Miz became co-captain. And you could see it bothered him, bothered Daniel Bryan. And then you saw it the week before that. And then, you know, obviously he comes out and he's got this new kind of hatred a little bit toward AJ Styles, which isn't new, but Paul Heyman kind of really started that whole thing. But then you get to the end of the match. And I think the part where it really sold me was when he came back to him and just started kicking him in the head. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I just looked at that and said, wow, this is it. This is where you thought he was popular before as a heel. I think he could go really well with this. And here's another thing you got to take into perspective. Brie, who was facing Ronda Rousey, Brie Bella, who was, you know, facing Ronda Rousey, she was a heel against Ronda. So now, if you were to pair up Daniel and Brie as a heel couple, kind of like Miz and Maryse was, but I think you would get a little bit more out of Daniel and Brie, but just Daniel by himself, based on what happened last night, I think the WWE could very well have a heel star in their hands. Daniel Bryan is already a star. He is a star around the world. Everybody loves him. I don't think that's going to change. However, I think at this moment in time, you will see a very good reception to this heel turn for him, in my opinion. Now, the only thing that I don't like about this is that we've spent the last 3 weeks building up AJ and Brock. And I really was looking forward to AJ and Brock and Becky and Ronda. So now it's two of the matches I really was looking forward to that are completely different than what they were a week ago. But I think it's still going to be a good match. I'm a little bit scared for Daniel with his neck injuries. I don't know how Brock's going to do with that. I don't know how Daniel's going to do with that. But if he can come in and get, you know, he's not going to beat Brock. I thought AJ was going to beat Brock, and I thought Becky was going to beat Ronda. But now I think Ronda will more than likely win unless there's shenanigans, which could very well happen. And then, you know, I think Brock is gonna beat Daniel. I think Daniel gets some offense in, but I think Daniel's storyline is obviously going to take place after this, which you're going to see a TLC match more than likely against AJ Styles in December, because that's the next pay-per-view coming up.
Yeah, that's. I thought about that too when Daniel turned heel. I'm like, wow, has his wife been in his ear? I mean, now that they're kind of on the same page, being both heels, and so yeah, could they team up? Absolutely. I mean, that makes sense now, storyline wise. They're both heels. I can do it. But kind of a piggybacking on what you said about AJ and Brock. Yes, we've seen it before. We saw it last year. I thought it was a pretty good match. Didn't blow me away, but I thought it was solid last year. And, you know, they had me excited for AJ Brock 2. You know, AJ had said now that that was 371 days ago or whatever. You know, I'm better at submitting guys than I was. And basically saying he's improved. And, you know, I was looking forward to it because you had a clear cut face. You had a clear cut heel. Now, Daniel Bryan just turned heel, but Brock is also heel. So I don't know how they're going to present this match. I mean, still on paper, I guess Daniel Bryan is the underdog, and you're going to cheer for the underdog just because he's, you know, a fraction of the size of Brock. So maybe that's how they present this match. It's just a weird dynamic. We all, you know, thought about, oh, we've never seen Brock and we've never seen Bryan. And maybe WWE is like, hey, we haven't seen this match before. The WWE has already, the universe has already seen AJ and Brock. We saw it last year. We can't have the same main event for the second year in a row. And we don't know if Brock's going to be here next year. Daniel Bryan's health is, you know, sometimes up in the air with his neck injury and his concussion. So I think that maybe they're like, let's pull the trigger on it because we may not get another opportunity to ever have this match. So that I think that factored into it, but I was really, really looking forward to AJ and Brock just because of I know that AJ can go. Brock's matches are always one to really sit back and you just never know what the hell you're gonna get. I mean, you really don't. It's the whole disaster he had at Crown Jewel with Braun Strowman was just 5 F5s. It was I don't even know if I want to get into that, but the point is that Brock's matches are very unique. They're not like anybody else's matches. It's almost as if he tries to come in and just get paid to do as little work as possible. And if they're trying to do that for his heel character, then great. I think that that works. But with Daniel Bryan, I don't think they can do that. They need to make this at least 10 minutes or so. And I'm very curious to see the psychology of this match, of how this evolves, and does anyone else get involved?
Yeah, and I think Daniel Bryan has a very unique skill set. I think he'll be okay. But here's why I didn't like the AJ thing, and I'll make this short because I know I'm pressed for time here. But in my opinion, why I wanted to see AJ and Brock again is because AJ was so close. He had Brock. He had him. He was one move away, I think, from really taking him. And I really thought this was his year to get his redemption. And now you obviously know that AJ is going to probably join the 5-on-5, which is fine. I don't mind that. But, man, it was just a match that you wanted to see. And AJ Styles really brought it up. He goes, yeah, Brock won, but who walked out? Who walked out last year? It was me, and Brock limped out. So I'm kind of like, yeah, you're right. Like, I remember that. Like, Brock was not in a good spot when he was leaving. So maybe AJ can do this, but now we're just going to kind of see what happens. I hope it's a safe match for Daniel. I think Brock is going to let Daniel get some offense the same way he let AJ get some offense. If Daniel Bryan wins this match, I'm going to be really surprised because I don't see how Daniel could win unless you're really trying to build this thing with AJ Styles. I think that's the only way that you could do it is you could say, well, AJ, you were WWE champion for a year. And you couldn't beat Brock Lesnar. I was WWE champion for less than a week, and I beat him. I could see that storyline happening. And to be honest, it kind of would make me excited. You could build on that, but if Brock were to lose this match Sunday, I would be very, very surprised.
I don't see it happening. I think that I think ultimately Vince is just opening his wallet because Roman Reigns is out, and I think he's thinking, oh, we need somebody as a placeholder while we build other guys. And I think they're just at a kind of a gentleman's agreement with Brock Lesnar. Obviously, they're probably paying him as they need him. I don't think they have a long-term vision with Brock. They're just kind of like filling the holes with Brock Lesnar when they need to. I don't think that this Universal title reign is going to last long. I think we all expect it to end at TLC, and I think that's where it will and should end. I don't need another year and a half reign of Brock Lesnar not showing up, the Universal title not showing up, just so he could say he's a two-sport champion at the same time when he goes back to UFC. I don't need any of that. But I'm always concerned when I see Daniel Bryan in the ring now, because what you're thinking is, okay, he's clear to return, but man, one wrong bump, one wrong move, one wrong turn, one miscalculation, and this guy's back on the shelf and probably back on the shelf for good. And I don't want to look at it that way, that I'm always concerned about his actual health and well-being, but I can't help it. And especially when you're in there with a guy like Brock who, is admittedly, I think he does work a safe but very stiff, powerful style. I'm still concerned about Daniel Bryan's safety in this match, and I'm still going to look forward to it, but they pulled the rug out from under me, and I still would vote for Brock versus AJ if I was in charge. So listen, James, it has been a pleasure to speak with you, and before I let you go, if you have any last comments, and let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at James Ludeman, JamesLudeman. I always love Twitter followers, and I'm team follow back, so make sure you follow me, and I'll give you one of those back. Planning to be at WrestleMania in April with my daughter, who's going to go for the first time, flying up there. So I'd love to meet you guys in WrestleMania in April. Hope to be there as well. And then really my final thought here is you could look at Survivor Series in a negative way because we've lost Becky and AJ's not WWE champion anymore. I still think Charlotte and Ronda will have a lot to offer. It won't be on the same level, but I think there will be a lot to offer. I think Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar will have a lot to offer, too. I think that's going to be a good match. If Daniel Bryan can get out of there unscathed, I'd be even happier. But don't go into this pay-per-view thinking that it's not going to be good, because in my opinion, I think it will be. I may not be the best pay-per-view of the year as I thought it would be a week ago, but I think it's going to be a solid pay-per-view, and you're going to have some pretty good matches and some pretty good talent on there. So make sure you check that out. And as always, thank you just for having me on, man. I appreciate that, and looking forward to just being able to mingle and have conversation with you guys going forward.
Yeah, definitely. We will have to do this again. It's been a pleasure. It's always great to talk to somebody else who is just as passionate about WWE for, you know, at any time, and especially someone that just respects the product and is a fan for life through the ups and the downs and through all of the stuff that we may complain about. But at the end of the day, we still love the product that is WWE. So, again, James, thank you. We're going to definitely have to do this again, and we'll be in touch.
All right, sounds good, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
Get to Old Navy's Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5. Get to Old Navy's Saturday only. Women's and girls' tanks are on sale for just $2. That's right, just $2. No better tanks, no better price. Just $2. One day only. Saturday only at Old Navy. Valid 6/29. Select styles only. In-store only. Limit 5.